From the latest hip hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host, and as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these streets, in these crazy, crazy streets. So happy October, everyone. I did not get a chance to wish you happy October last week. Things have been a little crazy for, you know, your girl RP in the last couple of weeks with the Haitian migrant crisis and still the earthquake that happened in Haiti and work and all this other stuff that you guys know that I do. So I had to do a replay last week, but I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was an amazing episode with guest Timothy Marshall. So you guys got to hear it twice. So today, we have an amazing show. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and every October we try to do an episode to play our part in the raising of awareness. Just earlier today, I actually hosted a breast cancer awareness brunch, the Pink and Pearls brunch, that was put on by Spring Forward LLC and Celebrate Life Inc., two amazing organizations that are just here as resources and support for people of color in particular. But today we have an amazing guest by the name of Shayla Alcide. She's my cousin. She's been on the show before talking about cryptocurrency, but today she is going to talk about her journey through breast cancer, as she is a breast cancer survivor. So you guys definitely want to make sure to keep it locked for that. Today we're not going to get too much into our preliminaries because we have, you know, the meat of the show. That's an intense show. It's an important show. But there's a couple of comments that I just had to make before we get on to that meat. First, it is World Mental Health Day. For those of you who don't know, October 10th is World Mental Health Day. And, you know, just another reminder that we all need to really engage in self-care and to really be mindful of our mental well-being, our mental health. You know, COVID is still out here popping, locking, and dropping. And we are still going through it. A lot of us have, you know, PTSD from COVID. You know, a lot of us are still cooped up at home. And even those of us who have to be in these streets to go to work, you know, we're paranoid. So there's a lot of stress, a lot of tension. A lot of people recently, as of last week in the New York City area, lost their jobs because of vaccine mandates. So individuals who are in the healthcare sector, in the education sector, like there was major layoffs just this past week. And so mental health, right, is on the line there as well, too. So I say all that to say this. Today is World Mental Health Day. Just another reminder to check yourself, check in with yourself, and check in with your loved ones, your friends, your family, especially those of us in the New York City, the tri-state area, that are really experiencing a lot of loss because of, you know, mandates and protocols and things like that that are put through. And the reason I'm honing in on that is because a lot of individuals who have lost their jobs were individuals who have legitimate reasons, right? They have medical conditions or some sort of religious belief that prevented them from, you know, taking the vaccine. And, you know, for whatever reason, their medical, you know, their medical exemption that was written by a doctor, not a quack, but a legitimate doctor, was not accepted. And I take exception to that. And maybe on a later show, we'll discuss that a little more as to what is going on in New York City. Today, actually, this morning, I got a text from my god sister that our governor, our dear governor, apparently is imposing, you know, more mandates in that if by January 1st, let me word this better so it can make more sense. Essentially, if you need to renew your driver's license, people, or your registrations, do it now, because if you wait till after January 1st, you will have to now have proof of vaccination in order to renew your driver's license in New York State and your registration. Crazy, right? This is not rumor on the street. This is what is actually happening. So for those of you who need to go renew your licenses, do that now. If you have to update your registrations, do that now, because after January 1st, if you have not been jabbed, you will need to show proof of vaccination in order to register, to update your registration and to renew your driver's license. Things are getting real out here in New York City, and it's to the point where many of us are wondering, do we still want to live here? But either way, that's for another show. The last thing I wanted to comment on, because since it's, you know, out here in these streets and everybody's talking about it, I had to comment on the Dave Chappelle special. This was going to be the womp womp of the week this week, but due to time, you know, we're not really going into the preliminaries. But I just wanted to say, you know, this organization, the National Black Justice Coalition, I have never heard of them in my life. And all weekend, I've been hearing people making the same commentary, like, who are these people, National Black Coalition for Justice, that is calling for Netflix to pull the Dave Chappelle special? I think it's the Closer? I watched the special twice because I heard the uproar. I heard, you know, what was happening. And I was like, let me watch this special to make sure, you know, that, you know, I'm on the right side of this argument here. I love Dave Chappelle. He will never do wrong in my eyes. But because I've been a follower of him since day one, I feel like I know him, right? I know what he is about, and I know what he is not about. And the one thing that I love about Dave Chappelle, which is something that I strive to do myself, is to push the envelope and to force people to think about things, right? To have conversations that we all want to have, but are too afraid to engage in. And conversations around the LGBTQAI community are always the most tense. It's the hardest to have because there's not a reciprocal... now I'm like, you know, losing my words, but the reciprocity and understanding is just not there, if that makes sense, right? It's either you are for, and if you don't 100% agree, you are automatically against. And that's not fair, right? Especially, you know, especially in, I thought that this was America, but I don't know, whatever. Every day, I guess I'm learning that, what's in the Constitution does that apply to everyone. But I believe in equality for all, right? I believe that everybody should be treated with respect. I believe that everybody should be able to live their lives authentically. But I do agree with, you know, some of the things that Dave Chappelle has stated, in that how, to what extent am I to participate in individual self-image? I believe that people should live their lives authentically and that they should not be prevented from doing so. But this ban, this call from the National Black Justice Coalition, an organization that I've never heard of before, but then when I dug deeper, I found out that they are an organization that their mission is to end racism, homophobia, and LGBTQ/SGL bias and stigma. Very honorable, because we do need organization to stand up for the rights of the people of the LGBTQ. I thought it was QAI, but apparently there's a SGL community as well. But I think where a lot of the backlash comes from is that the Black community still doesn't know who these people are, right? We have no idea where this organization came from. Apparently they've been around since 2008, I believe, or maybe 2008. And people are still wondering where, like, we've never heard of this organization. And many have criticized them for not coming to the rescue or not coming out in protest of, you know, Black women who are being kidnapped every single day and being, you know, murdered at alarming rates, and Black men who are being victimized on a daily basis. I don't know much about this organization. So I'm not saying that they're not out here in the streets, but are they on the front lines? And so I guess when they came out of nowhere to talk about Dave Chappelle, I think that's why people are like side-eyeing them a little bit. Especially for me, my confusion was that this is not the first special Dave Chappelle has created that referenced this community. So my thing is, where were you five specials ago, right? So it just begs the question, why now? Like, what are we looking for? Are we looking for notoriety? Are we looking for, you know, a little fame off the back of Dave Chappelle? All I have to say is that Dave Chappelle is the GOAT. Leave Dave Chappelle alone. If anybody watched the entire episode in its entirety, you would understand that he is not transphobic. He is not homophobic. But I think he is raising questions that need to be raised, right? How is it easier for somebody to change their gender than for a Black person to change their name, right? How is it okay for a Black person to, you know, get shot at and die, right, at the hands of another Black person? And with respect to the LGBTQI community, you know, if we make any little joke or any little reference, everybody's canceled. So I think it's really the equity of it all is essentially where Dave Chappelle is coming from. But it's been top news all weekend. I don't know what Netflix is going to do, but I feel like if Netflix has any type of integrity, if Netflix has any real understanding and real, pride in the work that it pre-vets, that it won't take down the special, because I don't see why this special should be taken down. If you watched it in its entirety, if you were just looking for Instagram snippets, then yes, I could understand the outrage, because you didn't actually watch it. You didn't actually understand where Dave Chappelle was coming from with all of this. But that's just my two cents that I felt like I had to share, because next week this might not be interesting anymore and I don't want to wait. So we are now on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, Shayla Alcide. Shayla, please say hello.
Hello, everyone.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm doing good by God's grace.
Good. Amen. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Oh man. So Shay, this is not your first time on this show. You've been on here before talking about cryptocurrency.
Yes.
But today we are going to talk about something a little more serious than cryptocurrency. We're going to talk about your breast cancer journey, as October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yes, that is true.
So for many of you who have tuned in the past and have heard Shayla with her amazing episode, I think it was episode 121 on cryptocurrency, or was that 131? One of them, 121, 131. She talked about, you know, her path in cryptocurrency and all the amazing things that she's doing. But Shayla is also a breast cancer survivor. And so definitely want to have you just talk to us a little bit, Shay, about, you know, what that was like. But even before that, though, because you know what, I do realize that not everybody tuned into episode 121
right?
Or 131, right? If you could just tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what you do, and then we can get into your journey.
Okay. My name is Shayla Alcide, but everyone calls me Shay. And I currently reside in Atlanta, but by way of born and raised Brooklyn, New York, I am a mother of two. And, you know, typical working mom, single mom. So the journey, do you want me to go into my journey of when I got diagnosed and stuff?
Because, I mean, okay. You know, we're talking about young Black women, right? And whenever yes. we hear about breast cancer, a lot of times we hear, like we think rather, white women, older white women. We don't think about young Black women. So maybe if you could talk to us a little bit about, like, you know, your diagnosis, when you were diagnosed, you know, what was your life like when you got diagnosed, just so that we can, you know, get people to really picture that this is like, you're an everyday person that this happened to.
Yes, yes. And so for me, it was, so prior to being diagnosed, I was pretty active. I worked in Midtown Atlanta. And I lived about an hour away, which I commuted a lot, which entailed a lot of walking. And I credit that to also my survival and why I was still pretty much healthy when I got diagnosed, which is a big thing. And I think people should really, really take care of themselves and really get in tune with your body. Knowing your body is very, very important. So with that being said, I used to commute about 2 hours a day. I mean, 2 hours one way per day. So about 4 hours of commute. And I realized during my commute, I would get really tired, but it was a different kind of tired. And also when I was in the car, I would notice that my eyes had this yellow fluorescent hue to it. Okay, but you just go on about life and you're not really paying attention. Then I discovered a lump in my breast. But when I did discover the lump, I did go to the doctor, and she encouraged me, you know, kind of made me feel good about the fact that it was a cyst. Mm-hmm. So, part of our thing as Black people, let me just speak for myself. She said I was good. I went with it. I didn't want to think anything negative. So I went with that and ran with it. But for like 9 months, I just felt uneasy about it. I couldn't picture it. And then you also go through this thing. You know how when you're ready to buy a car, like you say you're going to buy a Volkswagen, mm-hmm. and everything Volkswagen pops up?
Yeah.
So it was the same with breast cancer. Every commercial was breast cancer. Every car had the pink logo on it. And it was just like, okay, what is God trying to tell me? So in that moment, my sister, who, you know, who is an avid doctor visit, like she goes for every checkup, you know, she gets an eyelash hurt, she'll go to the doctor. So she went to a doctor for a breast exam or whatever. And she came out and she was like, I really love this doctor. And something called at me and said, you know what, give me her number so I can make an appointment. I did. And this was in May of 2014. And when I did go visit her, I can tell in her eyes that she was concerned, like immediately, because I had the lump, and the lump was so apparent that if I wore a t-shirt, you could see the lump through the t-shirt. Then I went for my biopsy, and unfortunately it came back that it was breast cancer. And immediately, and I remember being diagnosed on a Wednesday, and my surgery was on Friday, because she had mentioned that she does surgeries once, I think it's one Friday every month. Mm-hmm. And this was the first Friday. That means I would be waiting another 30 days to have surgery. And I was like, no. We waited long enough. Right. So I did have my surgery. I went in, had a lumpectomy. And when she did the lumpectomy, she realized that it was in my lymph nodes, which means we got to go dig deeper. And so on my birthday of 2014, I had a double mastectomy.
Wow.
Yes. So then you go through this phase of, well, my journey, it was kind of weird because I went through this. I didn't stay angry too long. I didn't stay scared too long. It was just like I went through the process like immediately. It was like, okay, there's no time to be afraid. Okay, surgery. Okay, there's no time to be scared. It's time for chemo. You know, it's like these things. And then I went into this rabbit hole of my health journey. Like, okay, yes, I didn't have time to do research to do like a holistic approach. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what, I'm going to battle it two ways. I'm going to battle it holistically and medically. So I did go on this journey of what happened? Because I did take all the tests too. So you mm-hmm. go through this whole thing, you take a test. I take the BRCA test because it wasn't hereditary. It's not genetic. And it wasn't, so when I took the BRCA test, it, you know, was, that's when they found that it wasn't genetic. So it's like, okay, what is it? Environmental? Was it something that I was doing or not doing? So you go through this whole phase of that as well. And so I battled it both ways. And I think for me, it was the best thing because I did experience what they talk about with chemo, you lose your hair. I did go through all of that, but I was really sick. I really missed out on work. I was working while I went through chemo and radiation. So for me, it worked out really well.
Okay. That, I mean, I'm just still stuck on the fact that you had to have the surgery on your birthday.
I did. So my birthday now is more symbolic because it was mm-hmm. like my rebirth. And it was at that time too, it was like, do you have it on your surgery? Not have it. You don't even think about those, you know, things that people, I was just grateful that I was alive right, on my birthday. Right. So it was like, what is the next step? Like, so there was no time to play around because even when I had the first lumpectomy, she said that I couldn't wait more than 7 days to have the double mastectomy. Cause it's like, it's part of the thing. If you have a lumpectomy, you can't wait longer to have the sex. If you have to have a mastectomy, you have to go in right away. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I didn't really have a choice because I did have it a week prior to, so I had the lumpectomy a week prior to my birthday. So there was no other choice but to have it on my birthday. Right. Not that I chose it. It just happened.
Oh man. You know, it's funny because, you know, as I talk to more and more breast cancer survivors and individuals with breast cancer, you know, we hear about like the fear of when the cancer spreads to the lymph nodes. Mm-hmm. And that tends, like for many, they're just like, you know, once it gets there, it's become, or it's gotten to a point where it's aggressive. And that's where a lot of them, the real fear is. So, I mean, when you were told that it spread to your lymph nodes or that it was in your lymph nodes, like what was mm-hmm. your thought? Did you have any knowledge of what that meant at the time?
I did. I had knowledge because I told you, like I went into this rabbit hole mm-hmm. of researching. So then that's when the fear came. It kicks in. Okay. But it was also one that I got angry at the doctor who didn't take me seriously the first time, right. You know, because it was like, had she caught it or had we caught it then, I would have had no chemo, no radiation, maybe just the surgery to remove it and be done with it. So I lingered on with it for like 9 months. So of course, now it had time to grow and metastasize. Right. So, yes, I do. But my doctor was so great. I have to give, you know, shout out to Dr. April Spencer. She was really good in the process because even when she diagnosed me, the first thing she said was, you are going to die, but it ain't going to be from this. Mm. You know what I'm saying? We all got to go. So that's inevitable, but it won't be from this. And so she reassured me that we're going to be okay. We got to go through this process. And then there's different types of breast cancer that people, you know, some people are aware of and some people are not. So thankfully, I wasn't diagnosed with an aggressive form. Had it been an aggressive form, I don't know if I would be here with you guys. Mm-hmm. But so it was so that even though it was in my lymph node, it had not spread anywhere else in my body. Thank God. So you go through a series of exams that you go through, PET scans and so on and so forth to see how far the cancer had spread. And then there's also different types of cancers. There's like the triple negative, which is not the prettiest one you want to get. And then mine was more hormone based. So there's, you know, other things involved. So, and like even till this day, I'm on a medication that suppresses my hormones because my cancer was hormone based.
I see. Now, did you have like a history that did you come to find out that there was somebody in your family that had breast cancer? Like, was there any traces of this?
The way they examine you and find out if it's hereditary or genetic is like, I've had cousins that's had it, but they don't count it that way. So they count it, they judge it by like maternal grandmother or your mom or your dad. So it has to be like immediately. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, I mean, my mom died when I was young. So no one knows if she carried the gene or not.
Right.
But when I took the BRCA test, it showed that it wasn't genetic. So it wasn't from my mother or my father's side. So, and when you take that BRCA test, like for me, it only really helps like my sister. It doesn't even help my daughter because she has a different father, right? So she would have to take a BRCA test. So taking the BRCA test really serves my sister because we have the same mother and father. Mm-hmm. So we know now that it's not genetic. She couldn't get it genetically. If she was mm-hmm. going to get it, it would be environmental or...
Okay. And so those are important things. Those are important yes. things to consider because I think, you know, it's funny because earlier today I was hosting a breast cancer awareness brunch and, you know, there were many women that were talking about their experiences and, you know, how they didn't really have a family history. But the environmental piece is, I think, what a lot of people fail to realize because we have so mm-hmm. many misconceptions about breast cancer, right? And I think the biggest right. one is that it's like hereditary.
Right. Yes. It's strange. And then I, you know, come to find out you go through this whole phase. So like I said, I live an hour away from Atlanta mm-hmm. at that time. I now live in Atlanta, but an hour away. So my home where I live, recently we found out that there's this lab that, I think they're medical equipment cleaning lab, but they use this chemical that they, you know, spew out in the air. And now I'm in a lawsuit of suing because that may have caused a lot of cancer. So in my area, there is a high rate of cancer wow. patients. So you don't know. So like where you live and what you're drinking and what you're eating really can take a toll on your body.
Right.
And you don't even know what is happening. So it's like, so like I said, I was diagnosed in 2014 and it wasn't until 2019 that this whole thing came out on the news that there's this lab mm-hmm. and people are getting sick. So in the area, like even like in my subdivision, there might be like five or six of us that are, you know, that went through cancer. And so it's like, okay, what is going on and what are we doing? So
wow.
you have to be aware of what you're eating and the foods that we're eating, the pesticides in our food and the genetic makeup of our food, you know. So, you know, you're going to go buy fish and you think you're eating healthy and it's, you know, was it farm raised fish or rather than wild caught?
Right.
What are you really eating?
So. Right. And let me tell you, I don't play games anymore. People can call me bougie if they want. If that salmon yes. is not wild caught,
don't give it to me.
I don't want it.
I want no parts of that salmon. You can keep that on your plate.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Me too. I'm very picky. I'm very intentional when I go grocery shopping. It's no longer willy-nilly through the grocery store. Right. I'm not looking for the cheapest product anymore because all that too is like, you know, like I have friends when I'm like, oh, you're so bougie. You eat only organic and la la la. It's so expensive. And I'm like, it can't be more expensive than chemo. Because that right there is a big business right there. So right. that doing chemo and radiation, I mean, well over hundreds of thousands of dollars just to be healthy. And that's the scary part too. It's like, thank God I had great insurance. But if you don't have great insurance, you don't get the care that you deserve. And they don't care out there about you. That's the sad part. Because I remember one day I had surgery, one of my many surgeries, which is another part of the whole journey. You don't just have one surgery and keep it moving. You're constantly under the knife. Mm-hmm. And I remember one visit, one surgery, they do the pre-op with you and they tell you, you know, tomorrow when you come in, don't bring jewelry, don't bring your wallet, don't bring this, don't bring that. So the next day I come in for surgery, don't bring my wallet. And the lady asked me for my copay. I was like, well, you said not to bring a wallet, so I don't have my card with me. They were going to reschedule my surgery. And I had to beg the lady, like, I promise you, when I wake up and on Monday morning, I will give you your copay. So imagine if I didn't have the money. They will not perform the surgery. You will die with your disease.
And that's the part that's really scary. You know, as we talk about how the racial disparities that exist, right, within the whole breast cancer community, I mean, through everything, obviously, you know, there's racial disparities with everything, but within breast cancer, because people kind of identify it as a white woman's disease. But just to hear like the horror stories, like something like your story that you just explained right now, like how your surgery was going to be canceled because of a copay situation. I mean, that's crazy.
Yes. Yes. And that's the scary part of it. And that's one of the things, too, that I also learned through this whole process, how this cancer thing is big business. Mm-hmm. Like, if you think about it right now, when you watch a show or you're watching television or anything now, how many cancer commercials do you see? It's like, come here, come to this hospital. We're better here at this hospital. It's like, why are you begging for cancer patients? You know what I'm saying? And even now, like even in Atlanta, they built this whole new cancer hospital just for cancer. It's like, how many patients do you plan on having in here? So they feed you. It's like, it's such a sad thing to realize how much money is involved in cancer that, a part of me feels like they don't want to cure for it. Why would they cure you if they can make money off of you? What's, if they cure you, it's one and done. Right. But if they keep making you come back,
You know, another thing that I learned to, well, I didn't learn it today, but I heard a lot about it being discussed today, and you mentioned it not too long ago, was this advocacy, in a sense, that you have to do for yourself as a Black woman cancer patient, right?
Yes.
The fact that, you know, you present to an emergency room or to doctors with certain, you know, symptoms or ailments, and you're just kind of dismissed. So I know that, you know, you were able to find a doctor that, you know, had your best interest at heart. And I'm curious to find out, was that doctor a woman of color?
Yes, she was. Yes, she absolutely was. Okay. And the first doctor that I went to was not. And it was just like, no, you're fine. Get out my, you know, exam room. And it's like, okay, fine. But the second one, she was thorough. She was patient. She prayed with me every time she touched me. And it was just like, at that moment is when I realized that I wasn't supposed to go through my cancer journey with the first doctor. I was supposed to find this doctor to go through it, because not only was she didn't treat me as a patient. And even when she mentioned, when, you know, she diagnosed me, she said, okay, we're going to go through this, and you're going to me, you're my sister. I'm going to treat you as if you were my sister or my mother. So we're going to be fine. And that's exactly how that whole experience was. That's one of the reasons why I wasn't afraid. She didn't treat me like the next chart. It was literally a family. I felt like I was with my sister. And I'm telling you, it's sad that you can't trust the other doctors, but it's also part of it. And because the whole cancer journey too, is all mental. If you're mentally not there and you don't have the mental capacity to get through this battle, you kind of lose yourself and the fight becomes harder. Mm-hmm. So having a doctor like that, an African-American doctor who treated me like a human being, who treated me like family, made the whole journey so much better, that much better.
And it's so sad that that has to be the case. But I think that that point just highlights two important things. One, as Black women especially, we have to advocate for ourselves, because there will be instances where a doctor will say, nope, nothing's wrong with you, or nope, everything is okay, and send you on your merry way. And two, we need more Black doctors.
We do. Absolutely do. It makes me sad for like the next generation if we don't have Black doctors, or have a, you know, also the doctors, you know, you may have his arm. She came with a team too. That was the great thing. Cause like my radiation doctor was a black man who attended Morehouse from Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? So it was right. Just like, I was in the hands of my people and they was like, listen, we're in this together. Mm-hmm. So it was great to see my people and have and be in my people's hand. Not that I don't trust, you know, other doctors and stuff like that, but there are some, I mean, like majority of them don't really care about you. They really, you're just the paperwork.
Right.
You're just another paperwork.
Right.
And it was, so I had, so during the process too, I had to see a nutritionist and so on and so forth. And, you know, they were other of the other persuasion. Right. Mm-hmm. And I remember they were like, you know, eat steak while you're going through, like eat beef. And I'm thinking, why would you want me to eat red meat? You know what I'm saying? Cause I was like, you know, on this, you know, doing it holistically as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why would you make me eat red meat knowing that I'm going through this? And then my doctor was like, listen, this is how we're going to fight this. We're going to do the surgeries and we're going to do this and you're going to do that. And you're also going to juice. You know what I'm saying? She's like, juice, 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 juice. And I literally was going through my chemo treatments with a juice in my hand. And I would literally leave and not feel sick or anything, to the point, there was a point my doctors were like in the chemo room or whatever, they was like, what is in that bottle that you're drinking? Because you come in here happy and peppy, you leave just as happy and peppy, you're not nauseous. And I'm like, listen, y'all not gonna get me to go down. I'm not eating McDonald's.
And you know, and it's so important, you know, again, when you have these doctors and people, I guess, that are part of your care team, right, that are one, open-minded, but also have that mix of Western medicine and I guess holistic medicine.
Yes.
Because I find that a lot of times, you know, you will find doctors most of the time that don't look like us, that are only pushing one, you know, treatment plan that doesn't really take into consideration, you know, the healthy eating and the nutritional stuff, right? It's kind of just like meds, meds, meds.
Exactly. And then that's, again, it goes back to the disparity, right? Aspect of it all, because I also ended up with a holistic doctor who practiced Western medicine. Mm-hmm. And so he saw it from both ends. And he, you know, and I was able to afford that, right? So I had a whole thing realizing, so we did a whole blood workout on me to find out what my body was allergic to. You know, like I found out that I'm allergic, my body's allergic to turkey. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So there's certain things that my body, if I consume too much of it, that my body rejects it. So these kind of things that, you know, if you're not financially able to do these things, you don't know how to treat your body in the future. You know, be nice to your body so you're nice, your body could be nice to you. So that's where it becomes unfortunate.
So now it's been some years now, right, that you yes. have been cancer-free.
Yeah.
I guess I want to kind of move to, what advice would you give to women, you know, particularly Black women, young Black women that have been recently diagnosed or are going through this breast cancer journey?
I would say your mental, your mind is very powerful. Think positive. Positivity will get you on the other side. It will get you on the other side of this whole journey. You will survive. You'll be okay. Because once your mental is right, you can get everything on the other side. Second, exercise. Exercise, even when you feel like you can't exercise. Get your body in shape. Eat healthy. You can have a healthy balance. You know, I still eat ice cream. You know what I'm saying? I still eat the cakes and the cookies. But the majority of my food and my plate is green. The majority of my snacks are fruits and nuts and so on and so forth. We, you know, lots of water. We really do have to take care of our, because prior to being diagnosed, I literally, because I have had a high metabolism, so I can eat whatever I wanted to back then. And I would literally come home and eat a half a gallon of ice cream. No problem. You know what I'm saying? Thinking, oh, it's okay because I'm not gaining weight, but I didn't realize what else I was doing to my body with all that dairy and so on and so forth. So I say, you know, get your checkups, get in tune with your body, know when your body is exhausted or when your body is telling you something is wrong. Listen to it. Because when in hindsight, I was like, you know, my body was telling me this. Like I literally would drive home and almost have to take a nap in one eye. You know what I'm saying? Like I would be in the car and close one eye to take a nap. That's how exhausted I was. But I ignored it and said, oh, you know what? It's the commute. It's the so on and so forth. Listen to your body. Take care of your body. Exercise, especially those that are going through it right now. I exercise through the whole journey. I know that after I did chemo, I would go home and walk for like an hour. And I would never let it take me down. Cause it was, and I remember one time I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna go and lay down. And when I laid down, it took over. And I was like, oh, okay. This is how you want to do it. So from there on, I was like, nope, I'm going to fight and power through it. Like I said, I went to work and through the whole process. So don't let your mind take over the whole situation. And also at that time, when I was going through the process, I had a cousin who was diagnosed for the second time, but she was diagnosed with triple negative. So hers was a little bit more dire. But we were going through the journey together, but she was such a negative Nancy through the process that it had to reach a point that I had to stop communicating with her on a regular basis. Cause we were trying to like, you know, be, you know, cancer buddies and power through together. But every time I spoke to her, she was so negative. She was like, well, tomorrow we might die, you know? And I was like, oh, hell no, I can't have this conversation every day. This is not the path I wanted to go through. Unfortunately, she did pass away, but she handled the journey differently than I did. But, and that was okay. You know, I couldn't judge her for it because I didn't know what, you know, everyone has their own thing. But I just knew that I couldn't constantly wake up every day in that negative Nancy mode, not when I'm fighting something this strong.
Yeah. And I hear that a lot from many of the survivors, that it was their positive mindset that really kept them going. And that the same thing, they knew individuals who took a negative approach, and those individuals unfortunately are no longer with us. So I think it really does go to show that mindset, regardless of what happens, you know, having a positive mindset through your journey can literally save you.
Yes. And that's with life in general, because stress is a killer. Right. You know what I'm saying? So you, when you don't have that positive mindset and you're stressing about stuff, you're only feeding that tumor. You're only feeding that cancer. Mm-hmm. So there was no way I was going to go through it and keep feeding this thing. So I was like, nope, you can't, you know, make me think that you have won. Absolutely not. Right. So, and it is true. Your mindset and how you know, tackle this battle is what's going to get you through it. And, you know, I know it's hard, you know, not everyone's going to get up and want to be happy go lucky, you know, because once you hear that diagnosis, it's like a punch in the gut. It's like, wait a minute, me? Why? Like, and it's not that you want it for anybody else, but like, why me? How, what did I do? Like, or how did I get this? You know, I, my neighbors live next to me, she didn't get it. And this, you know, and so on. And I walk and I do this, but it's also one of those things that if it wasn't for it, I would not know how to treat my body and how to eat and so on and so forth and help others and talk people through certain things. So, I mean, it is part of my story, and there's, you know, nothing I can do about it, and I'm not going to sit and sulk about it.
So when you were going through your journey did you, aside from the amazing the woman of color doctor that you had, did you find there to be support teams available or support groups available for women of color to navigate this process?
Well, they did offer me that. I don't know, honestly, if there was a big team for women of color, but you do need some kind of support. You can't go through it without any support. Mm-hmm. I fortunately have great family. Mm-hmm. So my sister, my younger sister, my baby sister stepped up and she was like, oh, wait a minute, hold on. She went to every visit. I mean, she might know more about my cancer medical history than I do, because she was like, you know, she's taking notes, she's asking questions, she's there. So you do need the support system. And whether you get it from family or friends or coworkers, I mean, my coworkers were great. My family, my children, I can't even tell you that. Thank God. So I didn't need to seek that from outside. And I'm also one that I didn't want to go through any like group therapy or anything like that, because I didn't want to sit in the negative. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to sit in a room and we're all sitting there crying and talking about what was me. That was just me. It worked for other people, but I could not wrap myself. I did not want to walk in a room and we're all like, oh, why? It's here. For me, it was here. Let's go. Let's handle it. But they did offer me some therapy or group thing, but I don't know if it was geared towards women of color.
I see. Because that's one thing that I've heard from, you know, many of the survivors, that unfortunately, as they were going through their process, you know, a lot of them had to, you know, do research on their own. They had to kind of figure things out on their own and navigate things mm-hmm. on their own. There weren't any real organizations geared toward Black women, geared toward mm-hmm. women of color, that, you know, could assist them through the journey. And so what I'm seeing now is just, you know, a plethora like of organizations that have come mm-hmm. out to just support Black women, especially with their, you know, cancer journey. And so, you know, it's one of those things where I wonder, you know, now, because you're talking about 2014, you know, although that wasn't mm-hmm. that long ago,
right?
So, you know, several years, and like what that looks like, you know, I guess, or what you perceive this to look like, I guess, this space now where mm-hmm. women can potentially get help for their, you know, for the process.
Yes. And again, that goes back to, you know, the financial disparity of it all, because I know for me, like, I had great insurance, and the hospital that I went to, you know, catered mostly to, you know, the Caucasian persuasion. Yeah. And so therefore they're offering you all of these things. You know, I didn't have to go seeking for it. It was there. But you try to think about in the lower income communities, is that being offered? Because, you know, they just, and again, they offer you things knowing based on your, you know, ability to pay. So like, I had great insurance. They were like, here. And it's like, no, thank you. I don't need this. I don't need that. I mean, even as far as the treatment, they prolong it along, you know, according to, if you have great insurance, if you may have had 12 rounds, they'll offer you, you know, 18, so they can get that extra. So that community, I don't know so much. Like, is that, for example, my doctor, she has, you know, taken, like, she's had several things. I've gone in and spoken at one of her events one time, and about, you know, reaching out to the women of color. So it's like, we really have to kind of create our own space.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, man. So I know that, you know, every year we go through, you know, I don't say go through, but we raise awareness for breast cancer during the month of October, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, especially for the Black community, it's kind of the same, where we see the pink ribbons and we know there's a walk, and we might see some commercials from the American Breast Cancer Society or the American Cancer Society. what would you like to see more of in the form of awareness as somebody who has gone through the journey, who has survived breast cancer? When we're talking about awareness, what do you think, should be highlighted the most when it comes to raising awareness?
I don't know. This is kind of like a touchy part of the subject for me, because I feel like when I hear, you know, when the month of October comes, I kind of get annoyed with it. Okay. Only because it's a community that I didn't want to be a part of, right? So it's a sorority I have joined by force. And then it's like the amount of money that's raised for breast cancer awareness and the Susan B. G. Komen walk every year, that they raise so much money, and you're going to tell me you still don't know the cure for breast cancer. So I get annoyed. So that I don't think it's more the awareness is, because even if, like, when I did the walk, of course, right? You know, and especially in the beginning, I did the walk, and then of course, remember I was going through my little rabbit hole, and I realized most of the sponsors for the walk are like deodorant companies that have aluminum in it, you know, things that it doesn't even add up, you know. And it's like, are we doing this because we really want awareness, or is this money? Is this all about the money? So it's like, I don't know if I can support something that you're going to tell me, like, okay, we just went through COVID, and, you know, Pfizer and Moderna and all of them found this, you know, wonderful vaccine, but in matter of months, and we still trying to find the cure for breast cancer and all other cancers.
Right.
So as far as what I would like to see, I would like to see them stop playing.
right.
Stop playing with me. Y'all know y'all have the cure out there, but they get more money to just do this, right? Okay, and just, you know, put a Band-Aid on it and then keep it pushing. But, you know, that's just me. That's just me, one person. I'm sure there's other people out there, but are they going to listen to me? But so I don't know. I don't buy into it, unfortunately. I don't know. I don't.
No, and you know what? And your sentiment, I think, is echoed by many. Even for those of us who, you know, have not gone through, you know, breast cancer or maybe even any cancer, but have just gone through other illnesses and whatnot. But I think that your point is made, and I think a lot of people, I think COVID has highlighted this, that, you know, things can happen, you know, when money, I guess, is behind it, or maybe an agenda, or whatever the case is. So I really do hope that with all that we have learned in this past almost 2 years, maybe we can get some more funding. We can get some more research. We can get some more resources to really deal with these issues, these illnesses like cancer that's killing people, right? That's literally wiping people out. So I totally get your frustration. It is hard, I think, especially as somebody who's gone through it.
Right. Yeah, because I don't think necessarily, you know, because you think about it, like, necessarily, it's not the funding. Okay, yes, everything is money, right? Mm-hmm. But the funding of it is like, how many years have we been doing the walks? Right. How much money is involved? And then you think about little countries, even our own, Haiti. Mm-hmm. The cancer rate is not that crazy in Haiti. What? Right. You're going to get tension. You're going to get high blood pressure. You're going to get, you know, diabetes. But you're not going to hear cancer in every other patient. Mm-hmm. How is it that they have figured it out? Or if it is, or why is it that it's not rampant in those countries? Right. Why big old United States can't figure it out? If your dirt is no good, if your pesticide is no good, if your thing is, we've raised enough money in all these years, and then it's like every year you want me to walk, and then it's like there's not even no real great progress. It's always the same. It's not like, okay, we've had this, you know, come into. It's always, we're still working on it, working. You didn't make a dent.
Right. How many more billions of dollars do we need to raise? I get it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
I get it. So, I mean, so for those who are listening, I love Shay's realness. Shay's my cousin. So, you know, this is the family, right? I love her realness.
It is.
Stop playing with us.
Don't play with me.
And let's get this cure. Let's get this cure popping.
Yes. Let's get it popping. I'll walk. And I don't mind the walk. I'll walk, but you got to give me something. Every year you can't keep telling me, okay, we're going to keep trying. And there's people are dying like every day. About, you know what I'm saying? We people are out here dying. So give me something. Don't build another building. Don't build another hospital, another parking lot, you know, for people to park in and come and get treatment. You know, you're figuring out, you know, these medications that not really do anything, but you know, I don't know. Let me get off my soapbox, but it is.
No, but it's definitely a point well taken. And like I said, I know that you're not the only one who's there, who's thinking that way. I think people are frustrated. And again, we've seen, you know, a vaccine roll out. almost overnight. Yes. So
overnight, right?
You know, so it is question. You know, people want to know, and I think that, you know, Big Pharma definitely has a role to play in all of this. But you know, hopefully, with more lobbying, more pressure, you know, maybe we can hopefully see this cure before we die.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know, when you're in it, like for me, for example, I'm in it. And I go to get checkup every, you know, like after you go through your whole treatment, you go through this process of getting checkup every month. And then it's every 6 months and every 5 months and so on and so forth. And when I go through treatment, when I go to, you know, get my blood work and so on and so forth, one day I got a bill from the insurance company and it was like chemotherapy. It's like, I'm 3-4 years past this. Like, I haven't had chemo in 4 or 5 years. And when I called, it was like the doctor was billing it as chemo because it was like $250,000 for that visit. Like, you know, like, no, sorry, it was like $25,000 for that visit, just the visit. So she's marking it as chemo because, you know, it's a regular visit. It's going to be my $40 copay. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, when I got the bill, it's like, yo, they asked me for $250 for what? And so then it you know, that's why I get into the space that I am right now. It's like, okay, why would you, you know, build an insurance company? So it's like you go into this mindset of, okay, yeah, it's all about the money. They don't really care about me. They care about the money. Right. So that's why I was on my little soapbox, because it hit me personally. Like, I'm in it and I see it. So on the outside, people are like, you know, let's go walk and wear this pink ribbon. And great, and we really want that. And these are, you know, really caring people that really want to find a cure. And it's like, I feel like you're playing with me.
Right. Oh, man. Guys, Shay is not the one to play with, first of all. She's not the one to play with.
Don't play with me.
Oh, man. Well, Shay, I do want to thank you for just taking the time to talk about your journey. Because you know what? I feel like every time we ask people to talk and to share, they kind of have to relive it a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that's, you know, that's vulnerability right there. That's even, you know, a source of pain for many. So I do want to thank you for just being vulnerable and for kind of going back into time a little bit to talk about a period of time where you were not your best. That's not the easiest to do, even though it's been some time, but you know, those are hard times.
Yeah, they are hard times. But you know what? I think that's my purpose. Mm-hmm. That's my purpose. I went through it. I'm on the other side of it. But it's also, it taught me who I am. Like, I know now what I will tolerate in life and how I want to spend my life and how I want to give back. To me, I love sharing this story. You know what I'm saying? I really do, because I feel like if it helps one person, literally, you always hear that, like, if it helps one person, then I've done my job. Literally, you do feel that way. Like, okay, fine. Like, now I have friends and family that will call me, be like, what do you think about this fruit? And what do you think about this vegetable? You
know, like,
all of a sudden, I'm the health guru. Like, the girl who ate 0.5 gallon of ice cream every night is now the health guru. So,
Well, I certainly appreciate you, because I remember that one time I was like, I feel something. Let me call Shay.
Yes. So it's absolutely my pleasure.
Okay. Well, you know, I promise not to get you every year for for breast cancer awareness, because you have so many other talents, as those of you who've tuned into episode 121 or episode 131. One of those two can tell you. But I definitely just wanted to thank you for just coming on and just raising your awareness, but just being real about it, being real about the situation, being real about where we are right now, right? We should be so much further, and unfortunately we're not, but hopefully we'll keep hope alive that we'll get there, you know, sooner rather than later, so that we can have less and less of these, you know, stories, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
Can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all on.